Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, January 19th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. TerraSpaces appreciates their support. Today on the Ether, we have the Minerva Wine Wednesday space. Focus, South Africa. Let's take a listen.
Welcome, everyone, to Minerva's first ever Wine Wednesday. It's a weekly session whereby we chat about wine from a different region each week, very much with the aim of learning about producers, about sommeliers, about people who are invested in those industries and really deepening our understanding of the wine world. I'd like to welcome Tinashe. Can you hear me there?
Yes, I can hear you.
How you doing, mate? How's things?
Awesome. It's quite a rainy Johannesburg at the moment.
Weirdly, in the UK, it's not raining. It must be the first time in a while that you've got it and we don't.
Yeah.
So, we're waiting on. There's another guest that should be arriving shortly, I hope. But just for all awareness, we're recording this as a podcast, and we're looking to refine our weekly format that we'll go with. So, if you're happy. We'll just start with an initial question. I'm aware I know the answer to this, but those listening probably don't or might not. So who are you and how did you find yourself in the wine industry? And that's for you, Tinashe, if that's all right.
Sorry, can you come again? I just lost a bit of connection here.
Oh, no worries. That's Twitter space for you. So just thought I'd start with the introduction. So who are you? Yeah. And how did you find yourself in the wine industry? How did that journey happen for you?
So I'm Zimbabwean. So I moved down to South Africa in 2008 and ended up in Cape Town, where I found a job working in restaurants. That's how I got introduced into wine. And I've become a student ever since then. Worked in the South African hospitality industries. I worked at the one and only hotel as a junior sommelier. Eventually, I became sommelier of the hotel. Then I worked again in KwaZulu-Natal in Durban for another five-star establishment, the Oyster Box Hotel. I worked there for like 4 years. Then I worked for the Test Kitchen restaurant, which sadly closed down last year due to COVID. But in my time there, you know, it was the best restaurant in Africa, in South Africa, and it was ranked highest it ever got was 22nd in the world's 50 best restaurant. So I spent 5 years there as a sommelier and beverage manager, procuring stock, food and wine pairings, as well as developing a wine program, which I developed over the course of 4 years. And this I was buying, investable grade South African wines that I was maturing, and it's a program that I'm very excited that I achieved, and it really bore fruits for the restaurant. During my time at the Test Kitchen, I also started venturing into business. That's where I launched my own wine brand called Kumusha Wine. And my first release was in 2017. And here we are, 2020. I'm releasing mostly my 5 vintages now. And I'm exporting from South Africa to USA, Holland, and soon into the UK, as well as in Africa, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Ghana, and soon in Nigeria as well. And that's what I'm really concentrating at the moment. I also still consult on wine list in Johannesburg. I do private wine events. I also help stock up sellers in Johannesburg. And I do a bit of wine investment with a wine seller in Cape Town. So, yeah, that's about me at the moment.
Thank you. Yeah, really, really sort of interesting journey. I guess a lot of our followers, a lot of those who are sort of on the Minerva platform, we took a poll a couple of weeks ago, and it said, I think over half, 57%, something like that, of people that follow us have never invested in wine before, but are really interested in it. So, you know, that education element's a big part of what we want to do as a platform. It sounds like a lot of your learning process came through the hotel world. Was that a relatively unique journey? And how did you find the relationship between hotels and wine? Was it sort of quite a comfortable one, or was it difficult at times?
Yeah, I think it is. It's an interesting part of the wine value chain that I started. Obviously, is the end where you the last person closer to the one consuming the bottle. So I was probably the last person in that value chain. But if you look at the wine value chain, you start from the production. You know, you've got the winemakers, the winery. You've got the other guys in the middle, the distributors, retailers. Then you get the hotels. So I think it was quite interesting for me because I got insights from the customer, what they preferred, their buying culture, why they preferred expensive wine over cheap wine. What are the perception of a bottle? What is the brand value of the wine? And you mix that with dining, with food and wine. So I think that's really what I learned from the hospitality side. But obviously, I did wine studies. I've got a diploma in wine. I've got WSET courses as well as a wine business management postgraduate diploma. So you then start to venturing in every wine value chain. Now I know a lot about distribution and retail, you know, the markups, where the value of wine is. I know about the production side. So I started from the top end and worked my way down as well, just to understand the whole wine value chain.
I really love that sort of the insight in that you're the person closest to the drinking, if that makes sense. And one of the things that You definitely notice the more time you spend in this industry is there are people who act like wine is never to be drunk. You know, those who certainly you see it from my end in a lot of London fine wine investment companies where the wine sits in bonded crates for years and it's traded within the warehouses and never actually the bottles held in the home. So a big thing that we want to do, and this chat's not about us really, but it's get wine into people's hands and have investment grade wine which in the end will be tasted. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
What for you, I mean, what makes South African wine in particular, and your wine if you want to chat your wine here, but what makes South African wine different?
Yeah, I think you have to go back in our 300 years plus winemaking history. So we're not a relatively new winemaking region. But I suppose over the years, especially in the 70s, 80s, we took a big flack because of the political situation in that. And I believe in the last 20 or so years, more so in the last 10 years, our wines have really come back to the wines of the late 70s, early 80s, where, you know, they're so much age worthy. And, that early winemakers who are coming now, who are young, well-traveled, they've made vintages all over the globe and starting to bringing that experience back home into South Africa. And also you know, planting specific vineyards in the specific site. So over the last 20 years, I think it's been a matter of, okay, guys, we've been making wine and we've been copying what France is doing, what, you know, what Germany is doing, what Australia is doing. We need to find our own identity. So I think that's what's been happening in the last 15 years. And the vintages which are coming now are true testament to South Africa. They represent what Stellenbosch has to offer or what Swartland has to offer. It's just that honesty and just appreciation of, okay, this is what we're making in South Africa. We don't need to copy the big Bordeaux style or the big California style. So I think there's been that shift and there's been, you know, emergence of wine superstars. And you know, we can talk of wine quality and wine of origin, but you have your, you have to have those personalities. You know, in France, it might be in the form of the top first growth wines, but in other areas like Australia, you know, you get the Hill of Grace, you get the Grange, they're all those established wineries. And what we lacked in South Africa is those strong wine personalities. So I think in the last 15 years or so, we've had those personalities in the form of Ibn Sadi's, your Chris Millenews, and your Canon Corps, really raising the, you know, the flair guy. But what I have to say is the quality has just gone comparable, if not even better than most wine regions in the world at the moment.
No, it could be. And I think that's being recognized internationally. If you look at sort of export rates, certainly here within the UK, you know, South African wines replacing New Zealand as sort of the go-to in a number of our main retailers for sort of medium price wine and towards the higher end as well. Interesting hearing about sort of, you know, the last 15 years, and there does seem to be, this is from an external perspective, but an inherent sort of friction between new wave winemakers and more established South African winemakers. And it appears to be, am I right in thinking from your perspective, it's the new wave that are making that ground internationally or?
Yeah, I think definitely so. The new wave have made it internationally, have raised the bar. But in turn, that has also pushed the, you know, the old established wineries who are stuck in the old ways. They're also getting young winemakers taking reins from the old guard. And these guys are turning around, you know, changing the evolution of those old established estates. So, for instance, you get Canon Corp. It's been around for years, but, you know, it's had a change of shifts, winning awards now. Buchanan's Kloof, for instance, Villa Fonte, or the old Altos. Those are old, you know, established wineries like the Merlost. But because of the change of shift and what they see, the new wave, they've also starting to change their old ways of doing things and making wines that stand up as well.
Mm-hmm. That could be. And what, you know, from either an economic, a political, a geographical position, what challenges do you think South African wine in particular faces?
Well, if you look at it, you know, in the bigger scheme of things, if you look at the world of wine, you know, South Africa is just a tiny drop, even in terms of production per year. It's we probably not even the top 10 at the moment. So that, in that fact, makes a bit of disadvantage, because other old wineries like Australia, Chile, Argentina, for instance, they do really rely on government assistance, which in South Africa, quite sadly, the government isn't really supportive of the industry, which is a pity. Then obviously with that, with the perception that South African wines have had internationally, you know, it's going to take time and effort to really convince people to really appreciate South African wines again. So I think the biggest challenge is being able to compete on the international level as a standalone country without government assistance. And the biggest challenge, I might say, is fighting that perception, because it's still there. You know, South African wines to an overseas market, it's bulk, it's cheap. But I think we're getting there. Now it's either it's good value for money, but we also want to get that value for the great wines we're producing.
Yeah, absolutely. And increasingly you see more forward-thinking investors realizing that, you know, it's certainly an element of the industry that has been under-supported internationally. And, you know, yes. with all the emphasis on French wines, on Burgundy, on Champagne, is, you know, one of the things we really want to do as a platform is, I'll say the word educate again, but also offer these opportunities, look at emerging emerging investment grade producers in these amazing spaces that are often overlooked by the well-established fine brand of fine wine merchants. And we as a team, we talk a lot about South African wine, and we know it's certainly one, if not the one, to watch.
Definitely.
I guess first of all, if anyone does have any questions here, thanks everyone who's here and listening. You know, really appreciate it. I'll ask another question, but if you want to raise your hand in the meantime, and I can let you sort of get up and speak during the gap there. But the final one for me, really, what comes next for South African wines? We've alluded a little bit to the future and the potential, but any wines in particular that we should be watching, or any trends? In terms of localized trends that we should be thinking about?
Yeah, for sure. I think the quality question is out of the way now. There is no debate that we're making outstanding quality wines. It's just a matter of, you know, spreading the word out there and really finding innovative ways to really do the marketing and sell the South African wine story as a collective. And, you know, like I mentioned, Canon Corp earlier, which the Paul Sauer 2015, I think the first wine to receive 100 points from UK-based Tim Atkin. And, you know, that wine sold out in its release, and now it's really have grown maybe 10 times or even 15 times in value in the space of, you know, 3 years. So I think you get that. You get Villa Fonte, you get Buchanan's Kloof, you get wines from the Millignieu. You get Merlust coming on the fore as well. You get the Sadi family, La Riche, Rustenburg. All those wines are really coming out. Chris Allight wines, Crystalam wines. And these are wines which are already allocated, minimum volume produced a year. And like I said, these wines are already doubling or tripling prices on the secondary markets as well. So I think the way forward is just to champion us from a South African side, to find a collective way to really package our wine and just feel confident about it.
Yeah, brilliant. I guess, you know, you alluded a little bit to a bit of a trend in South African wine in terms of smaller volumes, certainly compared to you know, your Spanish and French wine in particular. And I guess that's where our job as a platform for spreading these amazing wines and doing the marketing element as well is really crucial. Let's talk a little bit about your wine, if that's okay.
Before I got to that, I kind of found interesting was 3 years ago, that's 2018, there's this big wine merchant in South Africa called Wine Cellar. So they also have a commercial wine warehouse where you can keep your wines. So they're the first ones to really go around and really find investable grade wines in South Africa. And they came up with units of 100 wines, which were in the portfolio. Around 20 producers were selected in South Africa, and they were selected on the basis of a 20-year-old track record of making outstanding wines that scored on the big wine commentators' chances, be it the Tim Atkin. And they only allocated 80 units, which were quickly snapped up. I was fortunate to buy into one of those. And they were going roughly around £5,000. I think that was August 2018 when they were released, and year on to date now, that same unit is almost worth £8,500. So that's probably around 22% annualized growth. since then. And these wines have been kept at wine cellar, and their maturation level were pegged at 5 years. So you can only access them in 2023, but you can still keep them for longer because most of the wines in that unit are from the 2015 vintage, which is one of the most outstanding wine vintage in decades in South Africa. And those wines have a drinkability date of between, 7 to 15 years. So they'll still drink after that. So it's one thing that got me interested in your platform, noticing that there's this wine investment thing that's been done already. And how can we then elevate it and enter into a different space? So I just thought I would allude that because it was one of the reason I got to know about you guys because of this as well.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, it sounds like we need to give them a call and get in touch. Yeah. And that whole, these evenings aren't really meant, we don't want to talk about Minerva too much. But our platform definitely is aligned to that concept. If we can take that 5-year maturation time, if we can take the time that the customer's going to be waiting and add more potency to it, add yield to it, so that you can get yield on an appreciating asset anyway, take the difference between the £5,000 and 8.5, and then add more on top in a safe and secure way, then we've changed the paradigm in which wine is sold, and we've made customers given another opportunity to them effectively. So that's really what we're out to do, and it's been great to talk separately about our model.
Awesome. So you're asking about my wine. Roland has jumped in as well. Maybe you want him to share some insights on the South African wine industry before I jump on, or
is that Roland, you say?
Yeah,
I've just invited Roland to speak. Roland, if you're in a position where you can speak, that'd be appreciated.
So my wine brand, like I said, I launched it in 2017, and I have to make it out there. I'm not a qualified winemaker, and I don't pretend to be one. But like I said, when I came into the wine industry, working in the hospitality industry, especially in restaurants, gave me insights on certain wines, which are appreciated by guests, and what food and what style works with this dish, and using that knowledge as well as, being an international wine judge. So I judge on local wine competitions. I judge in Mundusvini in Germany. And when you're judging wine, you're judging the intrinsic quality of what's in the glass. You don't know the label. It's just the glass in front of you. You're judging, is this wine balanced? Is it great? And using that also information allowed me to go into their cellar and tasting barrels, sampling barrels, and understanding how the winemaker picked the grapes, processed the grapes, fermented the grapes. And so that's where I came up with my model, that I work with one farmer who is in the Rossenville, another up-and-coming wine region in South Africa, Opstal Wines. So he's the chief winemaker, and we help each other in terms of assembling the blends. So in my range already, I have 9 wines, preferably 3 red wines, and the rest is white. And it's different styles, You've got the entry-level stuff. You've got the mid-tier, which I try to be really creative, getting blends which are not really, really mainstream. Jacob Cabernet Sinso, or maybe I find an interesting wine region like the Saunders Kloof, I bottle it. Then you have the top tier, which have my white blend. And these are wines that I would say I personally enjoy, and wines that really show my experience working with food, judging wine. And these are complex wines you can feel comfortable laying aside and mature for 3 to 5 years for them to improve. So it's been doing well. Like I said, big in export in the US, coming into the United Kingdom now, and really making good inroads in Africa.
I think, yeah, absolutely. And, I think to say it's doing well might be, without wanting to, I realize you know, humility is an important one, but it's doing very well. And, you know, it's hard to read. It, certainly I've found it hard to read about South African wine without seeing your name come up somewhere. Certainly it's on a lot of favorable lists and people are recognizing it increasingly in UK publications that I've seen. We had an article from The Guardian, which was published about 7 hours ago, exclusively on you and your wine. So yeah, I really do appreciate you taking the time and coming in and having a chat with us tonight and your interest in Minerva and sharing your insights about South African wine completely. Are there any comments or questions from yourself or from the floor? Anything to add there?
No, I think you've shared your perception of South African wines, and it will be interesting to hear from the listeners as well, their perception of South African wine, and if they've tried some, which ones if they've enjoyed.
We've got quite a quiet crowd tonight, haven't we? I don't think we've got any hands up. I can't quite get onto Roland.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's no final questions, so we said we'd aim for sort of half an hour. So I will try and wrap it up now. Just want to say thank you again. Tanasha, it's been great to have you and to hear sort of first of all how you got into wine. I think we do have a question coming up now though. I've got JCS is just hopefully jumping up. JCS.
Hey, I've got a question, not specifically about South African wines, but as far as wine investing, you know, if you're getting started out doing wine investing, is that, you know, where do you start? Is it something that you start on with like your personal favorites that you like, or is it something, or are there standards that are out there that you're like, okay, no collection is complete without these wines, or how do you really dive into it?
Well, if you look at the history of wine investment, how it started out was, you know, back in the day, someone would buy 5 cases of the wines he truly enjoyed, knowing that these wines are coming in limited supply. So you have 5 cases you buy in today, you keep them aside. The next vintage, you get your allocation of 5 cases, you keep them aside. The next year, you get your 5 cases, you keep them aside. And the whole idea was, if you manage to keep the first wines for 5 years, by the time you sell them, or maybe you sell 3 cases from that wine, from that stash, you've got 2 cases remain. Those 3 cases we should be able to finance your next purchase of the 5 years. So after 5 years, you literally have enough kept aside to purchase your incoming 5 years, so you're not pocketing money from outside, and you still got to drink the other 2 cases. So the following year, you do the same. So I think the first place to start is to start buying wines that you personally enjoy, but that those that you know also would gain in value, that have a resellable value on the secondary market. Then build up from those. If you have enough of the ones you like, then you're looking at the wines you don't like, but which you know they've got a track record of, you know, accruing in value. But the whole idea is to keep them minimum 5 years so that when they resell, they can even buy 2 or 3 cases of the same wine down the line.
Thank you.
I think we had another question. Don't judge me. I'm not saying that's the guy's name. Sorry.
Yeah, hello team. So my question is a little insane. It's about a normal generalized question. So we are just recovering from a Great Depression, the COVID era, and I think we have consumed more wine than normal days. So is it like whether it's bull market or beer market, the wine market is always a green market? And the second part is that we are assuming that there will be a Great Depression version 2 in upcoming year. So can I assume that wine business is the new safe haven for investment because it will never fade? And if you think that it will fade after a peak time, when it will come?
I think wine is a safe investment. You'd look in the history of the depressions, you know, I think wine investment is what hasn't really fallen down. because for once people, like you said, kept on drinking. So in general, wine investment is demand and supply. So the more you drink, the less that are in supply. So they always get value. So that's the one thing, that in the depression, people drink more, meaning that there's less in the market. So your wine will always appreciate in value. And the other advantage, like I said, you know, at the end of the day, it's valuable wine. And if the worst case scenario, everything crashes, you still enjoy your perfectly made wine.
It's certainly, you know, the more you hear about it, it's often referred to as a sort of diversifying asset. And what's really interesting in this group, for me at least, is you've got people who are generally into crypto or blockchain technology in some regards, and tend to be perhaps a bit less risk averse. Maybe that's an assumption on my side. But yeah, it's certainly in relative context, it's a safer investment, and fluctuations are clearly far less dramatic than in that crypto space that some or many of us are used to. But if we can combine the power of that yield with a relatively safe investment, and if we exclusively offer high end producers, then yeah, we think it's a relative win-win, and that's the business we're building, really. Yeah. Any other questions at all?
No.
Roland's here, but I don't think I can quite get Roland up on stage. For those, yeah, do follow Roland if you're not already, and please, guys, yeah, do follow Tinashe. So so useful to have that insight today, and yeah, to really educate us on the landscape of South African wine at the moment. I think there's a lot of people in this room that maybe weren't aware or now certainly have an increased insight into just how up and coming it is as an investment opportunity. So just want to say thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure, man. It's a pleasure. Looking forward to more.
Cool. Brilliant. Well, guys, we'll call it a day there, and I'll end the space. Thanks everyone for listening. Next week, Santi, who's in the crowd tonight, is taking the lead. He'll be focusing on Argentinian wine, so talking to some Argentinian producers, some sommeliers, and I'm really excited to listen to that one. Guys, thanks. I'll see you later. Have a good night.
Cheers.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Minerva's Wine Wednesday, Focus South Africa, recorded on Wednesday, January 19th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. TerraSpaces appreciates their support. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay, checking that replay. Sing along and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody want to rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday, and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, huge sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around $0.75 to listen to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist. Pennies per play. Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson. Living in the eighth dimension might be worth a little mention. Living in the Great Depression, got a real regal feel. Reeling in another sucker fish out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw shit, now you only got two left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointing too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music. Spaces.